everybody. This is Nicole Clement, Senior Program Coordinator of the Technical Assistance and Services Center, or TASC. Before we get started, I just wanted to remind you guys of a couple of things. One is that we are currently offering calls with subject matter experts to you all on flex and SHIP topics. I know you're all busy writing and possibly rewriting your flex grant applications since you just found out you have additional funds to plan for, but these calls could be scheduled for after your grant applications are submitted. Each state can have a one-hour call with a consultant to find out more about one of the flex and SHIP topics that we've identified. You can find out more on the TASC website, and we'll share that link in the chat here in just a minute. So please go ahead and complete your request now, even if you would like it to be scheduled after May 24th. All requests need to be received to us here at TASC by May 18th, and calls need to be completed by June 4th. Also a reminder that we are available here at TASC to review one component of your Flex Grant applications. The deadline to have those to us is May 10th, so please email your document to us at task@ruralcenter.org, and we'll do our best to turn them back around to you in 4 business days. Two more things. We have TASC 90 webinar coming up May 16th, 2 p.m. Central Time, and Flex Reverse site visit registration will be opening very soon, yet today or maybe even tomorrow morning. So that's it for my announcements. The topic for today's Virtual Knowledge Group webinar is community health workers and their role in the transition to value. We have 3 speakers to help us understand better what community health workers are and what they do. We'll hear about a model in Montana that's getting ready to roll out, and we'll hear about a critical access hospital in Nebraska that is using a community health worker trained in behavioral health. And then also our first speaker is Deborah Lane. She's a program specialist for our center's network technical assistance program through Rural Health Innovations. Deb has 30 years experience with adult education, and her work with our center, she provides TA to rural health networks on topics such as strategic planning, evaluation, collaboration, and community engagement, partnerships, and leadership. So with that, I will turn it over to Deb. There we go.
Thank you, Nicole. It's my pleasure to be able to talk with you today about community health workers and their role in the transition to value. As Nicole mentioned, I am Deborah Lane, and I'm a program specialist on the network TA team here at Rural Health Innovations. We are contracted by the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy to provide technical assistance to rural health network development grantees and allied health network training program grantees. Almost half of those grantees, and that's about 60 of them total, that we do support across the country in some way or another work with community health workers. So I'm really looking forward to sharing some things about community health workers that we've learned. It's no secret that we're needing or being forced to move from a health system of high cost, low quality, high chronic illness, and low access to one that's looking at better care, smarter spending, and healthier people. Yes, times are changing, and at the core of this change is care coordination. This slide kind of says it all. It's a picture of how taking care of people in our communities is changing. When we are looking at a healthy population, we're looking at many partners. Many partners are already at the table with us, but there are also some more that we do need to bring to the table. If we are going to coordinate care to empower the person and bridge them to the needed resources and consider the whole person, we need to expand our traditional care circle, including partners, like you see here on the slide. The community health worker is the bridge to many of these population health partners and answer to many clinical workforce shortages. The addition of a community health worker to a care team helps staff work at the top of their license. Community health workers are identified by lots of different titles around the country, including community health advisors, lay health advocates, promotoras, outreach educators, community health representatives, peer health promoters, and peer health educators. And maybe many of you have heard other names for community health workers. What is the formal definition of community health workers? A community health worker is a frontline public health worker who is a trusted member of and or has an unusually close understanding of the community served. This trusting relationship enables the worker to serve as a liaison or a link or an intermediary between health and social services and the community to facilitate access to services and improve the quality and cultural competence of service delivery. A rather detailed and lengthy definition from the American Public Health Association, but it really sums up what that community health worker is. There's some key words here in this definition that sets a community health worker apart. A trusted member of the community, this enables them to link and facilitate access to needed services to improve health. Since community health workers are members of the community that they serve, and then we all know in our rural communities, those connections are typically very, very strong connections. As you know, there's lots of different levels of healthcare intervention. But we all have a role in that intervention, and some of us have a role in several different levels of that intervention. And so I would like to talk through these levels of intervention using community member Carrie. Community member Carrie was diagnosed with diabetes about 10 years ago. Carrie went through the diabetes education course, was faithful with all the checks, and Carrie has been able to manage diabetes without using insulin. And family members made diet changes and are very supportive of Carrie. Carrie still works on the farm and is active daily, has made an effort to walk with neighbors or family members if the goal of 12,000 steps a day wasn't met by doing regular chores. The area critical access hospital has chosen, because of financial constraints, to cut back on dietitians that Carrie often referred to. And there's rumblings even about that hospital closing. The hospital houses the pharmacy where Carrie gets needed testing supplies and medication. The community Carrie lives in is going through some significant changes. Not only did the hospital close, but so did the accompanying clinic. Having to travel to get testing supplies, medication, and having A1C checked has added even more burden to Carrie. And just not keeping up with the testing. And to make things worse, the local grocery store is closed, only leaving the expanded convenience store attached to the gas station as the local food source. Community member Carrie now has gotten to a point where most of the herd and flock, due to economic conditions, has been sold, and also farmer knees have been affecting community member Carrie. Farmer knees, that are those arthritic knees that are worn out by years of farm work. And it's becoming more and more of a burden to get fresh, healthy food. And Carrie finds it harder to grow and store those healthy foods. Community member Carrie's truck's water pump went out. When the plan was to go to town to get groceries and go to the pharmacy, Carrie's knees have been so bad that there's been no walking for the last 3 weeks. and this was just enough to put community member Carrie over the edge. Community member Carrie started feeling tired, thirsty, going to the bathroom often. Stomach was upset, started to feel faint. Dehydration brings Carrie to the medical care, to the ED, to that tertiary hospital. Carrie ended up having to take insulin and attend more diabetic education, some of those safety net programs and that secondary prevention. Carrie's church offered DEEP classes, which DEEP stands for Diabetic Empowerment Education Program, and the parish nurse is checking in on Carrie. Carrie was also committed to giving more regular blood checks, committed to exercising more, and following the doctor's advice or looking at our primary prevention. These are all things that we often see a case manager doing, things that can keep community member Carrie and others from falling off the cliff again. But the community health worker advantage is that they are in the community and that they can recognize things like the food desert, change in vocation, the effects of other chronic conditions on a person, change in a support system, social structures changing. The list can go on and on about the things influencing community member Carrie's fall off that cliff. Addressing the social determinants of health in a community to Carrie and to others from ever falling off of that cliff, that is one of the big keys with community health workers. Addressing those social determinants of health in a community is something that the medical or tertiary system often cannot do, nor that safety net program or some of those secondary prevention programs. Primary prevention is often busy with the education, regular tests, and clinical treatments that may not be on their radar screen. Even though the community health worker is involved at all of these different levels, because of being grounded in the community, they can address those social determinants of health along with the medical concerns of community member Carrie. The key takeaway here is that community health workers can go upstream a lot further than any other levels of intervention. Some of the defining roles of a community health worker. They assist individuals and communities to adopt healthy behaviors. They're in a position where they can conduct outreach for medical personnel or health organizations to implement programs in the community that promote, maintain, and improve individual and community health. They provide information on available services. They also provide social support and informal counseling, often advocate for individuals and community health needs, and provide services such as first aid and blood pressure screenings. They also are in a position where they can collect data to help identify community health needs. There's a new model that we're seeing emerge, and that's a move amongst the community health worker community to look at how the community can be a healthier place in general to prevent people from ever falling off the cliff so they become one of their clients because of going off that cliff. Times are changing. When I first began working with community health workers in the network setting, commonly, they were located in family service, non-medical, and government versus healthcare organizations. Now, there's been a recent move to medical facilities and having a community health worker located in the emergency departments, on the floors working with patients before being discharged, and also in the clinics. Community health workers advocate for the person often by walking right alongside of them. They coach the person to becoming independent. They provide culturally appropriate health education and information. They offer interpretation and translation services and assist people with receiving the care that they need or that true bridge. Community health workers, their most basic element is being a bridge. They provide a bridge. They're bridging from the clinical community to the reality or the community that that person lives in. And they're multilingual. Multilingual often in two different ways. One way is literally, they may speak a second language of the person that they're caring for, but perhaps one of the most important languages that they speak is that they translate medical terms for the client that they're serving, but they also translate cultural terms for the clinic or those medical providers. RHI in the center has done studies on different forms or types of care coordination or models for them. Our work has studied community health worker models. And what a person experiences in one of these models is really explained well by one of the interviewees of one program manager for community health workers. And I think the best way for me to describe what happens, and I know we have Maria that's going to explain more her type of work that she does, and I'm sure that when she listens to this, she can see similarities, but I'm looking forward to hearing how her program works. But this is what an encounter would look like. The first step would be to gather information on demographics, family history, medical history, and medication adherence. We look at healthcare utilization, insurance, or Medicaid status, and who is the primary care doctor and how often that they see that person or have seen a physician, and then find out what prevents them from seeing a physician. We look at other needs related to food, transportation, and those types of things. The second step would be to develop a care plan based on the information and looking at what the most important things to that person are. Maybe they do want to go to the doctor, but they're unable to obtain a medical card. They may be unsure who they should see. So it may be giving them a list of providers or connecting them with a federally qualified health center. Sometimes it's a community health worker making the phone call to get an appointment. Other times, due to fear, it's even the community health worker accompanying them to that appointment. And this is that walking alongside that I had talked about. She goes on to say, we break down the care plan very simply. There is no more than three goals and three very simple and specific action steps aligning with reaching each goal. If somebody presents an issue of getting to the physician, it's not like just simply telling them, well, make an appointment and go. It's really breaking it down into steps, like finding transportation. Maybe it's an issue with childcare. So they need to make sure that they're home by 3 o'clock when their child gets off the bus, and we follow up with ensuring that the appointment is prior to that time. These are some of the very specific things that we do. So that's an example of what an encounter could look like that a community health worker has. Community health workers really address the whole person, the healthcare and clinical aspects, the physician, or rather the physical environment, their housing, their transportation, social and economic factors, helping them get a job, the necessary education, financial assistance. They address behaviors such as smoking cessation, exercise, and healthy eating. Community health worker is an umbrella term describing health and social service workers who are members of a community and who assist individuals and communities in adopting healthy behaviors. They do not require in-depth education, and they may work for pay or on a volunteer basis in association generally with a local healthcare system. They usually share ethnicity, language, socioeconomic status, and life experiences with the community members that they serve. Community health workers are selected by the community, responsive to the community, trained in context of health interventions, recognized by health services and certification authorities, and not necessarily certified as professionals or paraprofessionals or degreed post-secondary education. Community health workers and their duties are as diverse as the communities that they serve. When an organization incorporates and has a community health worker as part of their care team, the level of intervention can become can be moved backwards beyond that primary prevention, which ensures better care and much wiser spending, all landing toward a healthier population. Community health workers are really a key to our healthcare transformation. And thank you for letting me share today. Nicole, I'll turn it back to you.
Thanks, Deb. That was great. Does anybody have any questions for Deb? Okay, hearing none. We had a few pre-webinar questions that we wanted to ask, so I'm going to just put these up here and give you guys a minute to answer these polling questions. The first one is concerning my knowledge of community health workers and their role in the transition to value IM. So we're just curious in understanding what your current knowledge is. And then the second question, in what ways have you been exposed to community health workers? And so for the first question, just choose one answer. The second question, select all that apply, please. Great. So for the first question, 8, 11, 12, 13, 14, I'll give you guys another 15 or 20 seconds. Looks like a few people are still answering. Okay, great. Looks like the responses have leveled off, so we'll go ahead and keep moving. Our next speaker is Sindra Stahl. Sindra is the Assistant Director of the Montana Area Health Education Center and works extensively on healthcare workforce issues, serving as facilitator for the Montana Healthcare Workforce Advisory Committee. Current focus areas include graduate medical education, health information technology, and strategic planning for the state's healthcare workforce. Previously, she was hospital services manager and data analyst and also worked in health policy at the New Mexico Health Policy Commission and also as a legislative analyst. So, Sindra, I will turn it over to you and give you presenter rights. You should see a right and left arrow in the bottom left of your presentation window. And don't forget to press star 2 to unmute your line. Sindra, I did remute all the lines a little bit ago, so you'll need to press star 2 to unmute your line.
This is Sindra. Can you hear me now?
Yes, perfectly.
Okay, good. I was just rattling on, and so now I can't remember what I said. But anyway, this is Sindra. I'm from the Montana Office of Rural Health and AHEC, and I'm very happy to be able to share with you today our journey in getting community health workers up and running in the state of Montana. So this definition probably looks very familiar. We've seen it a couple times in Deb's presentation. We have added another sentence to this, the very last sentence that states a community health worker also builds individual and community capacity by increasing health knowledge and self-sufficiency through a range of activities such as outreach, community education, informal counseling, social support, and advocacy. So we wanted to be sure that was part of our working definition here as we moved forward with our project. For Montana, our history working with community health workers began in about 2010. We started exploring interest statewide in 2010, and we've done a couple of periodic workforce assessments since that time. The Hospital Association, meanwhile, in about 2011, did a community health integration project, which was a care coordination pilot project, and that was funded by the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy and CMS. Part of that project included placing community health workers in 11 critical access hospital communities. I might mention these were some of the smallest of the small critical access hospitals in Montana, and not just rural, but we would consider them to be frontier communities. The CHWs were sponsored by an advanced practice RN who was housed in a central facility at the Hospital Association. And this pilot project was very thoroughly evaluated and found to be cost-effective and improved patient outcomes, even with the small numbers of facilities and the relatively small numbers of patients that were affected. There were some very significant improved outcomes and very significant cost effectiveness also. From that information, we, the Office of Rural Health, convened a stakeholder group beginning in about 2015. Over the last few years, we've had funding in the form of grant funding from several groups, including the Montana Healthcare Foundation, Healthcare Montana, which was a Department of Labor funded project, the Geriatric Education Center, and recently SAMHSA and HRSA, and of course the AHECS. The effort that we have been organizing so far has been staffed by the Office of Rural Health and AHEC, and we manage a stakeholder group, a policy and reimbursement committee, and have been doing the actual work on a curriculum development. Our curriculum has been created to be completely provided in a distance format, and we're also working with apprenticeships, formalized apprenticeships through the Department of Labor. Our recent SAMHSA and HRSA Behavioral Health Workforce Grant is also going to be able to pay for training for CHWs as well as some behavioral health techs. And so we're excited that we can get some good numbers of CHWs trained through some of our grant funding and really get a good jump on getting good trained CHWs out in the field. The course that we have developed, as I mentioned, the course itself is completely online. We have four modules, and each module is divided into 3 to 5 hour units. The first module is talking about community health workers and their roles and responsibilities. Second module is communicating and collaborating with individuals, groups, and communities. Our third module, quality healthcare systems, organizing and coordinating resources, services, and care. And the fourth module is providing outreach, advocacy, and promoting healthy communities. There is a supervised field experience, as well as some journaling, a short presentation that's required. And if you'll notice, we have deliberately chosen to not have any clinical-oriented trainings, not even blood pressure or temperatures or anything. As we started talking with our stakeholders as we were developing the course, we decided that we would do a very, very basic CHW course. And as the community health workers moved into employment, if their employer wanted to offer additional skills in the form of any kind of clinical training, that would be something that was an option for them, but that we wanted to stick to a very, very basic curriculum. The Policy and Reimbursement Committee is examining the role of CHWs in models of care that are under consideration by the Governor's Council and our innovation model design. They will evaluate the use of CHWs with Medicaid populations and other care coordination models, including patient-centered medical home, CMS-funded care coordination projects, ACOs, and the CPC Plus models, which we are involved in here in Montana. This committee will also identify policies and reimbursement models that support the use of CHWs through Medicaid and private payers. This slide is a little bit mislabeled here. We did a really nice environmental scan last year. The first question, are CHWs employed in Montana, does not relate to the rest of the graph. So let me just talk this through. Are CHWs employed in Montana? Of our respondents, 32% said yes. They were employing CHWs in a variety of positions and job titles. The next percentages, 42%, 38%, 8%, et cetera, those are the types of organizations that responded to the survey. So 42% of the respondents to the basic survey were from nonprofit organizations, 38% from critical access hospitals, 8% from state agencies, tribal health, and 4% from long-term care. Of the groups that were using community health workers, the services that they were providing in rank order included serving underserved populations, promoting preventative care, helping clients with paperwork, helping with transportation, serving as a conduit for healthcare services, educating clients on how to navigate and access healthcare, nutrition education, health promotion, chronic disease management, link the uninsured to healthcare coverage, and serving as a conduit to health screenings. When we compared our 2017 survey to the one that we had done just a couple years previously, the populations served were essentially exactly the same, until we got to the very last couple of categories, which interspersed. So CHWs are used to work with elderly residents, rural residents, low socioeconomic households, American Indian populations, and non-English speakers and new mothers. So as we now have our online curriculum just ready to go, almost, our next steps in this process are that we will release the Community Health Worker online course, which will be offered through the Montana Health Research and Education Foundation, MHREF, which runs the Flex Grant for Montana. And the course will also be offered through the Montana Health Network. The Health Network is a very long-standing hospital network that functions mainly in the eastern part of Montana, with critical access hospitals in that part of the state. At this point in time, we are requesting that healthcare facilities sponsor the community health worker students, and then they will be reimbursed for the training costs. we want the students to be affiliated with a facility right off the bat. As I mentioned, our course does have some supervised practicum, and we want the students to be able to have ready access to that, as well as someone to supervise them. So for now, we're asking that the facility sponsor the students, and then there is some reimbursement available through our various grants. We are underway in discussions with EMTs to offer CHW training to EMTs across the state. We're also working into fundamentals of behavioral health and also offering a management of aggressive behaviors training. The fundamentals of behavioral health, I think, is being looked at very closely by critical access hospitals and will be offered through those same organizations that I mentioned earlier. In addition to the behavioral health issues, we're developing some specialized modules and supervised training and development of a CHW association. Some of those specialized modules might include specific maternal and child care, diabetes care, geriatric specialized modules. So there are lots of possibilities that are coming up for specialization there. Lastly, as we were developing our course here, we did not specifically address any licensure issues or official certification for CHWs as we developed our course. Of course, there is potential for legislation related to CHW licensure that may come up later. I guess that will depend on the stakeholders as we move forward. But at this time, we are not pursuing that legislation for licensure. So, as we developed our program, it really was developed as a grassroots effort, developed from the ground up. The folks that have the need, the organizations that have the need, the facilities that have the need were all part of our curriculum development and continue to help us move our efforts forward. We've been very encouraged in the numbers of hospitals or nonprofit groups that have expressed interest in getting training done, and we're most excited to get that launched within the next couple of weeks and get some well-trained folks on the ground and ready to go. If you have any questions about our particular curriculum or how it was developed, please feel free to call Kristen Juliar, who is actually the director of the Montana Office of Rural Health and AHEC, or certainly you can call me too at the Montana Office of Rural Health. So that will do it for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Sindra. There was a question in the chat box about the core competencies for community health workers. Do you have a response to her question?
We haven't worked real specifically with Flex. I think that was your comment, Nicole. We did have Trish is asking about Carl Rush and Lee Rosenthal. We did have Carl Rush actually come and speak with us as we were starting this project. And I think that just through the course of working with our particular stakeholders, we developed the core competencies that we did. I am not familiar with the C3 project. I am guessing that we're pretty consistent with that, but I am not real familiar specifically with the C3 project.
Great, thanks. Anybody else have any questions for Sindra before we move on to our next presenter? And just a reminder, it's star 2 to unmute your line if you want to ask a question. Okay, So our last presenter is Maria Reyes. She works for Lexington Regional Health Center in Nebraska, and she's been a community health worker for 3 years. So Maria, I will let you tell us about your model in Nebraska. I should also be clear that Lexington Regional Health Center is a critical access hospital. So Maria and Leslie, I think, is with her as well. Star 2 to unmute your line.
Okay. Good afternoon to all of you. And I'm happy to be a community health worker here in Lexington, Nebraska. The question was like how Lexington Regional Health Center determined that they need a community health worker. Well, my supervisor, Pat Samway, said there our CEO, Leslie Marsh, sent her to a conference where they were presenting information about a community health worker. She came after the conference and discussed that with Leslie, and they decided that they needed to hire someone to do the community health worker job. So here I am. I had been in Lexington community for 26 years, so I know the community very well. And we have a kind of different demographics here in Nebraska, especially here in Lexington. We have 60% of Latino Hispanic population, so I kind of represent them. I know them. I cannot say each of them, but most of them. I know the part of their backgrounds. They come from different communities. They come from South America, Central America, or Mexico. We have a lot of new Cubans, a lot of new communities, and in our community, they're new. So we have to adapt ourselves to help them. Most of them come with different mentality about prevention. If you talk to a Cuban person, it's kind of hard for them to understand. Here in the United States, they have to pay for everything because in Cuba, medicine is free. So for them, when you talk to them about insurance, they go like, why I have to pay? I already pay an insurance at Tyson or whatever they work. So it's kind of hard for them. So we had to work with them through those things. A lot of the Hispanic or Latino community, they call their country of origin and they bring medicine from there too, trying to avoid the cost of medicine here in the United States. It's not only in Lexington, but in the United States. Sometimes you ask them, had you been ever sick? No. Are you diabetic? No. I just have sugar, but I'm not diabetic. Sometimes the vocabulary is hard for them to understand. So that's my role as a community health worker, to help them to break those barriers. We have many chronic diseases here, you know, like most of the communities, diabetes, hypertension, obesity, all of them play a big role in our community. I had been involved in many of the different webinars. I like to learn, and every day I do my best to learn. The other question was, like, what model or who pays for? I know I receive a check every 2 weeks, but I was asking from where the money comes. The hospital or Lexington Regional Health Center had take the cost of my salary and all my expenses. They had seen the need. Maybe in the future we can be reimbursed for my services through Medicaid, Medicare, or maybe even private insurance. But before that, they need to see the need or the benefit that they receive using community health workers in the hospital. Since we are involved, I'm an interpreter and a translator at the same time here at the hospital. And it's one of the parts that I like a lot, because when I go to interpret for a patient, I get to know what's happening, what do they have. A lot of our communities, or the members of the community, they come with insurance or without insurance, documented or undocumented. And sometimes it's hard for them to share, or they feel ashamed to share where they're coming from. So I had to meet with them. A lot of times I just said, be very honest. We have had situations where they register in one place with one name and then the other place with a different name. So it's hard for us to accommodate what needs of help do they have. So I meet with them and said, just be honest, everything is confidential and we need to know who you are. How can we help you? It's not easy sometimes to share that, but we had to break that. you had to gain the trust in order for you to gain that information. What kind of outcomes are you able to see, qualitative and quantitative, if possible? All people deserve the opportunity to belong, healthy and productive lives. Doesn't matter their background. In fact, offering all people tools and conditions associated with better health and less disease is an investment that we will have in our communities, even in our country, that provides generations of positive outcomes. Because if we teach, you know, this generation how to take care of themselves, they will be able to help the rest of the family. And that cost will be less in the long future. More wellness, less illness. Patients that understand, they need to understand why they come into the doctor, why they taking that medicine, how do they supposed to take the medicine. A lot of times, you know, we just say take it twice a day. They were like morning and night, but I have no idea that I can take it, you know, 500 milligrams or 400 milligrams. They're not aware of milligrams. You have to teach them. I remember helping one of the doctors that we have a patient that he came and they prescribed medicine for his blood pressure. And a month after he came back and we said, how do you feel? And he says, I hadn't taken it. And we go, why? Did you pick it up from Walmart? And he says, yes. But I was ashamed to say that I didn't speak English. So I say to everything, yes, yes, yes. But when I opened the bottle of medicine, was not the same color that I was taking in my country. So that medicine that he was taking in the country was a green pill with a little line in the middle. So he didn't take it because it was not the same medicine that he was taking in his country. So it's a lot of little things that can make a big difference in the patient when they come. A lot of times they don't know when to go. Something that I have learned, even though I'm Mexican, I didn't know that in Mexico it's more expensive to go to urgent care than to emergency rooms. So a lot of times we see people walking into the emergency room without thinking, they don't go to urgent care. But they have the idea of the countries of origin, how much they charge in certain entities. So that's something that we need to know about it too. I have learned a lot. I took the community health worker training through the Department of Health and Human Services. I really liked the program. I did it online, and then we meet, I think, twice during the time that we were taking the training. We had a lot of homework, and I was able to learn a lot. I know as a community health worker, you seem more as an advocate, because we have to advocate for our patients in the community. I like the first presentation where they have, you know, in the middle of the community health worker and the rest of the staff, where it's like, you have to know about education, about unemployment, and even immigration. You have to know all those issues. Helping the different patients that I have been helping, in order for them to have more benefits or better benefits, I help them to become not legal permanent residents, but as citizens of the United States. We went through all the paperwork. They thought they didn't have that $700 to pay, but immigration has some waivers where they don't need to pay. So we were able to complete that for them. So there's a lot of little steps that you can do for all the patients. Sometimes it's like getting the trust and ask them, what needs do you have? How can I help you? How can you overcome those obstacles? How can we reduce your stress levels? Because that has a lot to do. A lot of the migrant population goes through a lot of depression. They're far away from their support, far away from their loved ones. Is there anything else that you want me to ask or to answer to you?
That was great, Maria. Thanks. I think Leslie is sitting there with you, your hospital CEO. Did you have anything you wanted to add, Leslie, at all?
I guess I just want to say that, you know, I can't overemphasize the importance of Maria's role here in the hospital and in the community. And she wasn't able, you know, to share all of the things she does. She also went through Beacon training, and she has a behavioral health component to her degree or to her education. And that's really nice because, as she said, there people are depressed. People, you know, are stressed about situations, and especially if they're sick, and they're sick in a place where they're not really sure how the system works. And Maria is able to go out there and talk to people in the community, whether that's a church or the grocery store, or she teaches the deep classes, and they have fun and they trust her, and it's been really gratifying to be able to see the good that comes from, you know, really being able to leverage Maria's talents and skills and knowledge as a community health worker. I think she's done so much to improve the overall health of our community, and I just can't say that we would have, if we could have three more of her, we'd probably be a lot farther along in terms of managing our population and their health.
Thanks, Leslie. There was a question in the chat box from Tish Singletary. What cost reductions or savings has the hospital seen?
So our readmission rates, we talk about reduction in harms. So one of those ways that we measure that is through readmissions. And our readmission rate has declined by 80% over, I think, 2012 to now. And a lot of that is because when a patient comes in, they're identified early on. Do they need some extra help? Maria works with our transition team. They may say, yeah, they do need some extra help. Maria's in talking to them. And so right there's a reduction in harm. And so we measure that, and we've so far, our cost has, our cost of a reduction in harm associated with reduction in harm is about $279,000 just for this past 2 years of harm. And that has a lot to do with Maria being able to explain to somebody, you know, this is how you take your medication. Do you have questions? You can't take the medication that you got from, you know, from Cuba or from wherever with this medication. You know, you need to make sure that, you know, you're talking to your physician or your provider. And so she does a great job of doing all that. And so there's also an unquantifiable cost. What would the cost of that person's, you know, death or acute illness be if she wasn't here? And so I think that there are two ways to measure that, but that's really about the best that I can say without having, you know, spent a lot of time and effort measuring before and after in terms of.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But those things are so important as the healthcare system's changing. I mean, we keep hearing about the ding for readmissions from Medicare, and as the system moves to value and quality care received, those things are going to be so important. So.
Right. It's well worth the you know, the investment in Maria's salary and sending her, you know, for education and you know, it's an investment that I make again and again, and it's the right thing to do, and it really does make a difference in people's lives, and it's nice to see people feel a sense of accomplishment. And, you know, and sometimes bad things happen in people's lives, and it's nice to be able to have somebody who's grieving over maybe the loss of a child or something like that, have somebody that they can turn to and speak to in their own language of,
right.
and who knows their culture. So
right.
We love her. The whole community does. We're blessed to have her, and I hope that you've found her as endearing as we do.
I think her message was great. Her information was fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm going to just put these up here so that you guys can answer them while we talk just a little bit more. We use pre and post questions as a way of gauging the knowledge gained on these webinars. So when you answered them earlier, these are the same questions, but I want you to consider what you've heard on this webinar today and what you've learned, and answer the questions again now that you've heard all of the information that we had to offer on community health workers. So while that is going on, I did want to ask if, I know we only have a few minutes left, but I did want to see if there were any states that are on the call, just listening in, that have community health worker initiatives in whatever stage happening. Maybe you're just researching it, or maybe you're thinking about it more seriously and talking with your partners about it, or maybe you're implementing. So if there are any states on the call that are doing this work in whatever stage, feel free to press star 2 to unmute your line and share what's going on in your state.
Hi. Hello. Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, this is Steven Jenga with the Missouri Hospital Association. In Missouri, there is a program with the community health workers, and there's been several stories like Maria gave that have been going on, and we've seen some hospitals have started using community health workers a little bit more, and so this is something that is still new, and I know there was a conference in the last 2 weeks also, and we got like to hear a lot of information about that. So we are in the initial stages as well in the hospital settings into seeing more and more of them getting utilized, and there's been some very good stories and benefits to the hospitals and the whole well-being of the communities that they serve.
Great, thank you.
This is Stephanie in Idaho, and we have a Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation grant, a CMMI grant, and one of the initiatives is considered part of a virtual patient-centered medical home, so initiatives that can kind of help support a patient-centered medical home, but outside of the confines of the clinic, and community health workers is a piece to that, and we've had some hospitals that have been implementing this well before we even got a CMMI grant, and I think they've all said that there is absolutely some benefit from getting community involvement and these individuals seen as a resource, and we now have an online training so that everybody has sort of the same foundation. I think one of the challenges that they've seen is high turnover, so sometimes there can be some burnout, and so making sure that those community health workers also have support. And I think, again, and I think Maria mentioned this, and the sustainability of it, trying to find some reimbursement for the work that these folks do, I think is a big challenge. And the other piece is where some of the CHs have been struggling is that they're engaging in these really progressive, innovative ideas, and they are reducing their reimbursement or their readmission rates, and it's actually negatively impacting their bottom line. So trying to be innovative and yet still stay open has been one of the challenges that we've seen, but they've absolutely seen that on a population health level, it's the right thing to do. So in Idaho, absolutely. I mean, and I think this was really helpful to hear directly from a community health worker, so I greatly appreciate that.
Thank you for your jumping in, Stephanie. One comment about one thing that you said, reimbursement. I know that some states are starting to reimburse for it. Minnesota is one that Medicaid is reimbursing. I don't really know the details. I don't know how many other states or how common that is, but just to mention that.
Yeah, and actually Medicaid is the one in Idaho that's actually taken it on, looking at it to try and see sort of a tiered approach to reimbursement. Like if you're a patient-centered medical home and you engage in one of these types of initiatives, like a community health worker or community health EMS, then you'll get some sort of a reimbursement piece. But so far, it's only Medicaid at this point and not necessarily the other payers. But I absolutely agree. That's sort of a step in the right direction.
Right. And if it's anything like community paramedicine, which is different, but the private payers, the Anthem and those, they are starting to recognize it and are starting to pay for it. So I'm sure there's definite progress. I'm sure it'll come. Yeah, it'll come.
Yeah,
I'm guessing.
Hi, I'm Tish Singletary at the North Carolina Office of Rural Health. I just had to think again because we started an initiative here in North Carolina for community health workers. Back in 2014, we started exploring the use of community health workers on healthcare teams and trying to create some type of infrastructure to support and sustain their efforts. So looking at workforce development and training and potential certification. So we've been down this path now for 4 years, and we're at the point where we've created a set of recommendations around core competency training and the roles and responsibilities and the idea of what a certification process may look like. But in the meantime, we're trying to implement some of those things. So thinking about where and how training should be held for community health workers and the costs that are associated with it. So multiple modalities, obviously, and trying to keep it as low cost as possible. And then the other thing that's happening because of, you know, North Carolina did not opt into the Medicaid expansion, so we put forth the waiver and we've put in our application. And the secretary is looking at the use of community health workers as part of workforce development. And so there's conversation around accountable care communities and how community health workers fit into that. And so North Carolina has named a community health worker coordinator position in the Office of Rural Health, and that's my role right now. And so we're doing a lot of exploration with this idea that we're going to have some infrastructure available to move all these pieces that I mentioned forward in a way. And I think the biggest thing for us is that we're fortunate to have community health workers as part of this conversation, and the need to create some type of statewide network where they can advocate for all of this is vitally important. And so that's where we are. But we do have hospitals that are tapping in and organizations that are tapping into using community health workers and seeing benefit. But the biggest thing, obviously, is that most people want to know, where are my savings? So I liked that the CEO from Lexington Hospitals, I think I'm saying that correct, provided some two viewpoints about the savings. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think you can talk about these emerging models without talking about reimbursement, if it's happening and if it's not bringing out the point of the value to the hospital without the reimbursement is super important. So thanks for your comments. Okay, everybody, we're at the end of our time. Thank you so much to our speakers and to everybody that shared and asked questions. Please just take a minute to answer those last two polling questions at the top about if you learned something today and your overall satisfaction with the webinar. Some upcoming events I mentioned earlier, Task 90 is coming up May 16th at 2 p.m. Central Time. For those of you involved with the Medicare Beneficiary Quality Improvement Project, some different participants are and aren't, but ARQEDA is offering Ask Robin quarterly open office calls for MBQIP data abstractors. That's coming up on June 20th, and that requires advanced registration. So that's actually for critical access hospitals to take advantage of some help with abstraction. ARQEDA has an MBQIP virtual knowledge group webinar coming up on June 21st at 2 p.m. Central Time. And then I also mentioned earlier that the Flex Program Reverse Site Visit registration would be opening soon, and by soon I mean either today or tomorrow morning. So that is all I have. And if you have any other questions about virtual knowledge groups, community health workers, anything we talked about today, feel free to contact us here at TASC and we can find an answer to your question or connect you to someone that is doing the work. Thanks, everybody. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.